You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeder.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Tuesday, October 6, 2015. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, the Trans-Pacific Partnership negotiations have ended. Parties have come to agreement. Is it a done deal? Also on the program today, U.S. bombs a Doctors Without Borders hospital in Afghanistan, killing nearly 20 people. Our media can barely tell us that it happened, and our military can't seem to tell us why it happened, as if there is actually a good reason. Meanwhile, Democrats, Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, and I would imagine Martin O'Malley and Lincoln Chafee and Jim Webb, although we don't hear much about them at all, gearing up for the debate in Las Vegas on Tuesday of next week, 1 week away. There is a 50% chance I will be credentialed to that debate and at that debate, but more on that later. Should also note that on Tuesday of next week will be the final day you will ever hear the voice of Matt Binder again.
You're going to hang up on my calls?
We're gonna put a voice changing device on it if you call it. You will never hear from Matt Binder again after next Tuesday, ladies and gentlemen. Also on the program, Texas textbook, which characterizes the presence of African Americans in the southeastern United States as a function of immigration, leaving out the forced part and the slavery part. But that it appears that that textbook will be amended. We shall see. All that and more on today's program. But let's start with some of the lighter fare. Well, there is a story out. I don't even know if it's, a story. It's we're all aware by now of the story of Bo Biden on his deathbed telling Joe Biden, you've got to run for president. And by all accounts, Bo Biden, a very impressive guy. I mean, he was one of the last holdouts on that mortgage deal. I wonder if I would imagine perhaps if his father had not been vice president, he would have been the very last and may still very well have been holding out. Nevertheless, and I guess that's not necessarily the measure of a person, but apparently that story of Bo Biden telling his father, you've got to promise me that you're going to run for president, was related to Maureen Dowd, who wrote about it first, by Joe Biden himself. Now, a little bit awkward, I guess. But look, you know, say what you will about Joe Biden. I have said on this program many times before that the guy has run for president twice. I think the last time he ran in 2008, what did he come in just behind Richardson or just ahead of Richardson in Iowa? In other words, he didn't do very well. And I suspect he won't be doing himself any favors if he runs this time. But better to maintain his legacy and go forward. However, and we would be remiss if we did not report this from the so-called journalist Edward Klein, who this guy writes regularly at is he at WorldNet Daily? This guy, he
used to be a serious journalist, right? Theoretically,
I don't recall. What was the book that he wrote? Didn't he write some book about Clinton?
The problem with Hillary.
Right.
Unlikable. with Hillary.
Is that really the name of the book?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
And he's a former foreign editor of Newsweek and former editor of the New York Times Magazine. See? He used to be legitimate.
And he was a tabloid writer, right? Gossip guy?
Oh, foreign editor at Newsweek. I don't know.
Really? Are we looking at the same people?
Definitely. This is his Twitter handle.
All right. I don't know.
That's unlikable, the problem with Hillary.
And you could sign up for Ed Klein Confidential, but I am going to blow the lid off of this thing that's supposedly confidential. Ed Klein reported just last week, talk in Democratic Party circles is that Barack Obama has told Joe Biden he's prepared to endorse him for president if, in return, Biden promises to let Obama have a final say in the choice of his vice presidential running mate. And, of course, you know Obama, you know who he's going to pick and what the parameters are going to be. And that is, in this scenario, which Obama has not yet fully explained to Biden, so Klein is actually getting this info before Biden. And when Biden saw this information, I can only imagine what he said. Biden would promise to serve only one term in the White House, after which he would back his vice president to succeed him. And, of course, Obama is all part of Obama's plan to make sure that out of the next two presidents, another one of them is African-American. Obama would force Biden to choose former Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick to be the vice president, who then would ultimately become the president. Under Obama's plan. Now, I guess, to a certain extent, we should be thankful that Obama's not forcing Biden to choose a non-American, like maybe like a Kenyan or, you know, an avowed socialist. I mean,
do you really know where Deval was born?
That's true. Off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you in a million years where he was born.
Right. Why don't you use a little bit of journalistic skepticism like Edward Klein, Barney?
Maybe Ireland.
Yeah, well, or maybe not.
I don't know. I mean,
maybe that name is a deep cover.
Deval Patrick sounds, maybe he was born, I don't know. But
maybe his real name is Kwame Nfume.
That's possible. That would be weird.
I think it's very possible. I wouldn't put anything past this administration at this point.
Well, this is just shocking news. And
all right, look, Joe, you're one of the good ones, okay? Let me just say that right up front, all right? So I tolerate you, and Hillary's not going to be president. None of these Republicans are going to be president. We all know the long-term master plan. I guess you don't, because you're sort of like the help around here. But let me explain to you how it's going to work. One term for you. You get to run around, obviously. Me and Skip Gates and Cornel West will still control things behind the scenes. 2 years in, Minister Farrakhan's on the Supreme Court. Don't ask me how that's going to happen. It's just going to happen. All right? Then he named Deval Patrick, or as I remember him, Kwame, my classmate, at Kinshasa Grammar School. That's right. That's in the Congo. People don't even know this. It goes so deep. So that's the plan. Can you get on board with that, Whitey?
And
Allahu Akbar.
All right.
Say it after me, Joe. Allahu Akbar. Oh, and by the way, tell Maureen Dow that your son wanted you to run for president. Remember how he was saying he wanted you to stop and smell the roses? You got to just be like, what was well, that you said? What'd you say, son?
That's Joe saying, I'm sorry, did you say Rose Garden? You want me in the Rose Garden? Okay. All right. Let's.
I like that kid. Exploit his memory.
Let's go on.
I just want to degrade the white man. Duh. All right. Thank you so much.
All right. We don't want to, I mean, we don't want to alert. We don't want, and frankly, I'm a little bit concerned about revealing too much. Don't want to reveal too much. All right. Let's talk about this, the TPP. We don't know the details as of yet as to what is in the agreement. We do know that, according to all reports, has been agreed to by all parties. There, just a reminder, there are 12 countries involved in this agreement, and don't have the list right in front of me. Sorry about
I think
that
it's Malaysia, Brunei,
Vietnam,
Chile, I believe, actually. Let me see.
Look it up. And then
I'm
just,
looking it up.
I
was giving you names while I looked it up to try to bide for a little time here. It's Brunei, Chile, New Zealand, Singapore, Australia, Canada, Japan, Malaysia, Mexico, Peru, the United States, and Vietnam.
All right. And we spoke to Clyde Prestowitz, I guess it was now two or three weeks ago, about at least the fallacies that we have been told of the agreement in respect to China. And even if we, on multiple levels, the whole China explanation is bunk. I mean, even just starting with the premise as to that China is in some way some type of existential threat to us. And what we really need to do is make sure that countries can't have generic pharmaceuticals as a way of heading off China's, I guess, encroaching ambitions, and that Hollywood needs to maintain their copyrights for an extra 30 years so that China is in some way contained. Because, as you know, once you get access to public domain of things like Red Dawn or any of Lou Diamond Phillips' work, then, of course, your international imperialist ambitions are much easier to execute. So according to – and we tried to have David Day in today, but he's actually – I guess he's doing a little conference in Washington or something. Yeah, yeah, good for David. But according to what I've read and – there are at least some minor improvements around the edges, particularly preventing tobacco companies from using the investor state dispute resolution process. And the investor state resolution process, we've talked about quite a bit. Just as a reminder, if there are regulations that are passed and imposed by a specific country that is a party to this agreement, an industry or a specific company can go to basically an arbitration board, if you will, and say, you know, this regulation, let's say you can't log in this forest, or hey, we're going to need higher standards for emissions or whatever it is. This undermines our projected profits. We were going to enter this market, or we're in this market, or we're rolling out stuff, or we have rolled out stuff, and this is going to inhibit our profit making. We go to this arbitration board, which will determine just how much that country has to pay if they want to pass these regulations. Now, that board is made up of no people from labor, no people from consumers, no people, just trade representatives from the government, and then mostly industry attorneys. So I would imagine the rate of incidents where an industry loses when approaching these investor-state dispute boards is rather low. And this is the point. And we've already seen this in the context of things like fracking. We've seen it in terms of in the context of NAFTA between Canada and the U.S. Not only would it basically amount to blackmail, if you're going to pass this regulation, you've got to pay this industry X amount of dollars. But it also will inhibit other, because it's not just a question of federal government. It could be within the context of states. We've already seen this dynamic play out. Pennsylvania passes a regulation. They get sued, essentially, in this investor state board. Then you may see New York not attempt to adopt that regulation because they don't want to have to pay for that type of situation. So tobacco companies are prevented from using the investor state dispute resolution process in this trade deal. In other words, some of these countries said, hey, at one point we may have the political desire or will to say to impose taxes on tobacco products or to put on the labels like, hey, this is giving you cancer, just like they know in these other countries. So the tobacco industries are barred from using that dispute resolution process. There is a lower exclusivity period for high-cost biologic drugs. And the interesting thing about those small changes, while they are no consolation for people who are against the TPP, they may create bigger problems for people who were for the TPP or at least sitting on the fence. Remember, this is a two-part process, right? The TPA, which was the Trade Promotion Authority or Fast Track, was passed now, well, months ago. And this basically said that the deal comes before the Senate, comes before the House. There is no process to amend anything. There's no process to strike specific parts of it. There's no ability to filibuster. It is an up or down 50-50 vote. So we don't know where people stand on the TPP, but we do know where people stood on Fast Track, and that was at least an indicator. Well, there were 17 House Republicans, mostly from farm states, already said last week they would not support the TPP if it had the tobacco carve-out. In other words, we're so much in the pocket of Altria or whatever we're calling, whatever we call the tobacco industry now, the giants, that we cannot allow for other countries to protect their own citizens from this product. So we would not vote for the TPP. 17 defections from the House Republicans is enough to kill the deal in the House, assuming the Democrats vote the way that they did. Remember, in the House, it was basically the Republicans who passed the Trade Promotion Authority. Democrats voted against it. This is the way it will work going forward. And everything is complicated now because of John Boehner's resignation. Most of the people, of the representatives who were involved in the coalition that ousted Boehner, were people who were also against the Trade Promotion Authority. So, again, it's not a one-to-one relationship of being against the Trade Promotion Authority and being against TPP, but it's a pretty high correlation. This will come up at the earliest February 5th. And the reason is because once the administration makes the intention to sign the document, which I think that clock starts ticking yesterday, I believe. They have 30 days to prepare, and then there has to be at least 60 days where the deal is available for everyone to read. So there'll be a 60-day period, so 90 days total, October, so November 5th, December 5th, January 5th, February 5th. That's more than, that's 120 days. So I don't know. Maybe the clock doesn't start ticking until the administration, but from all that I've read, the first week of February is the earliest in which it could show up. Now, of course, that'll be right in the heat of the primary season. It'll be interesting to see. We're going to hear more people talk about it, I would imagine, as of January 1st, January 2nd. The question is, will a guy like Donald Trump make a big issue of this? Because you had the, if I'm not mistaken, Rubio, Cruz, Rand Paul may have voted against the Trade Promotion Authority. I'm not sure. We got to check those votes. But Rubio and Cruz, as far as I know, to the extent that they've expressed anything, have been somewhat in favor of the TPP, ostensibly because it's free trade. If Donald Trump gets up there, and we do know that he was involved in ads against it, if he starts demagoguing it, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out with the Republicans in the Senate. But again, it's a 50-50 vote. Cruz voted against the TPA. So I don't know. We'll see. Maybe he will also stir things up. But again, no filibuster. So that's where we are on that. And I suspect you're going to start to hear more and more from liberal activist groups. It will really be interesting if Rubio can continue to justify it, because you know, I mean, I would imagine, let's put it that way, because and I think, you know, Prestowitz touched on this, and I've read others touch on this. There does not seem to be a huge, and apparently Ford has come out against it. The car companies are not necessarily in favor of this. Because this trade deal is not really about trade primarily, because we are already in have trade with virtually all of these countries, unfettered trade, the impact or the benefits, supposed benefits from this trade deal are so minimal that it does not seem like there is huge support from business at large. So it's unlikely they're going to be sinking a ton of money into ad campaigns and whatnot. So it'll be interesting if Donald Trump gets up there and challenges Rubio to vote against this. If Rubio will just stammer or if he'll actually stand up. I don't know, just take a shot of water.
He'll sweat.
He'll sweat.
The headline for this Breitbart piece when I was looking up his vote, this is back in June, was that Marco Rubio cast deciding vote for Obama trade without even reading it. And then when you go down the article, this is Jeff Sessions. Jeff Sessions of Alabama says that this agreement would give the Sultan of Brunei, who implemented Sharia law in his nation, that's true, and banned Christmas, will literally have an equal vote to the United States.
Wait a second. This is the TPP is going to ban Christmas?
You heard it here first, folks.
I got to say that's been
why do you think I'm pushing for this so hard?
We should also say we have a guest in studio today, Alan, and it just occurs to me because nobody gave him headphones. So if we play any music, anything, he can't hear it. So I like how I just got like blank stares from the two producers here. Just oh,
that is true. He cannot hear the sound.
That is correct. Did get in a little late here. Let's try to find something.
There have been multiple stories. I don't know at this point if there's anybody out there who can explain to me what we're doing in Afghanistan at this point. I sure would like to hear it. But I imagine most of you heard the basic outlines of this story. It was reported, I believe, over the weekend that Well, I guess it depends on who you read as to what happened here. But it was reported that an airstrike happened on a hospital staffed by Doctors Without Borders in Kunduz, Afghanistan. And it quickly became clear that that airstrike, Glenn Greenwald has a great piece about this, where CNN and the New York Times apparently had headlines that was something to the effect of like, hospital gets bombed, U.S. bombing in the area. I'm not kidding. Most of the press has been able to write U.S. bombing kills at least 19, at least 18, 20 at Afghanistan hospital. CNN had it. Air attacks kill at least 19 at Afghanistan hospital. U.S. investigating. What other air attacks? I mean, are there other fighter jets or bombers flying over Afghanistan other than U.S. jets and bombers? I guess theoretically, there's maybe some Europeans. Are there still, though? Nevertheless, it became clear over the weekend that the U.S. was responsible for hitting this hospital. At first, the story was that it was collateral damage. It's not quite clear what collateral to what. Ostensibly, I guess it would be to bombing Taliban forces. By yesterday morning, it was clear that the U.S. was claiming, anyways, that it had been instructed or requested by Afghan forces to bomb this hospital because supposedly there were Taliban fighters there using the hospital as some sort of human shield. Let's just take it there for a moment. Let's just stipulate that that's accurate, and we'll talk about whether or not that's an accurate claim anyways. But is that really justified? What is the scenario where that's justified? To bomb a hospital that you know is a functioning hospital because you believe there are Taliban fighters there using the hospital as a shield. What is it that the Taliban fighters could be doing from that hospital that represents more of a threat to anyone else than to have doctors and patients in that hospital bombed? Like, what is the cost-benefit analysis for something like that? If we don't bomb these innocent civilians and doctors in this hospital, then what will happen? No, but presumably, right? It's like, we have to. The Taliban's using this as human shields because as they're using these people as human shields, they are doing X, which is so threatening or horrific that it justifies our bombing a hospital. That's the best case scenario. And that's a horrible scenario because there has been no suggestion whatsoever. It's one thing to say, look, they're using them as human shields. That's why we ended up having to kill all those innocent people. Human shields in what context? What are they shielding themselves from? What are they doing from that position of being shielded? That makes the analysis, it's worth sacrificing. I don't even know if you can say the word sacrificing. I mean, just even that. There's no sacrifice involved in that. On behalf of the people who make the decision to bomb them. So it's worth us killing those civilians to stop the Taliban from blank. It's absurd. Well, it gets worse. Apparently, Médecins Sans Frontières, which is the French name for Doctors Without Borders, had repeatedly advised the U.S. military of the exact GPS coordinates of the hospital. Most recently, they had done so on September 29th, 5 days before the strike. The bombing lasted for almost an hour, somewhere between, I've seen reports for 30 minutes, I've seen reports for 60 minutes. Repeatedly during that time, Doctors Without Borders personnel at the hospital called U.S. military officials to advise them that the hospital was under attack and to ask them to stop. But apparently, the strikes continued. So, I mean, it's... Apparently, this hospital had been raided 3 months earlier by Afghan special forces, claiming that there was an Al-Qaeda member as a patient in the hospital. Doctors Without Borders makes no excuses or no apologies for treating everyone who comes in the door. They do not care who it is that they're treating. They're just functioning as doctors. There's also apparently no other hospital in that region. And we've bombed it. At one point, the AP claimed that it looked at a video and saw weaponry in the hospital's windows. They ended up deleting that claim. Doctors Without Borders personnel have repeatedly said there was no reports prior to the bombing, immediately prior, or even at any time prior, at least recently, of any fighting that was going on. So any stories that were floated, well, there were American military personnel pinned down by Taliban fighters firing out of this hospital, are fiction. I mean, every time you see one of these situations, not every time, but often, this idea of the human shields, they're using human shields. On October 4th, Médecins Sans Frontières tweeted, "To be clear, not a single member of our staff reported any fighting inside the Kunduz hospital compound prior to U.S. airstrikes on Saturday morning." It killed 22 patients and Doctors Without Frontiers staff. It really is stunning. And the latest, again, from the from Army General John Campbell, local Afghan forces asked for air support and U.S. forces were not under direct fire prior to the U.S. bombardment. Now, here's the good news. There's going to be an investigation. There's going to be an investigation. The United States is committed to investigating this.
Absolutely look into that.
We're definitely going to look into this, and someone's going to be punished. It'll probably be that guy, Bill Stevenberg, over in Afghanistan. That guy is going to definitely go.
Bill Stevenberg?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's really bad at calling in airstrikes. No, it's going to get rolled on Afghan forces.
Of course.
Yeah.
Ahmed Stevenberg. You know, it's like the it's.
I had Shabbos with that guy a couple years
it's
ago.
It's like no. Yeah. The point is, yeah. It's like my dad found a roach, half a joint in my house when I was in high school, and I said, "Oh, it must have been that Jimmy Sullivan guy." Yeah, he came over. I barely knew that guy, but he came over with my friends, and I'm never going to hang out with that kid again.
No, I know. I get it. I know that guy, too.
There was a good piece in The New Yorker. 5 questions about the bombing of a hospital in Kunduz, but it really just leads to the last one. It is, why did the United States bomb the hospital? What did Afghan forces want us to bomb? Why didn't the bombing stop? Do we understand our allies' motives and priorities in Afghanistan? I mean, how many people now do we have still in Guantanamo? They're just a function of Afghanis basically coming up and saying, oh, yeah, that guy. He was working with the Taliban. I mean, I don't know how at this point we don't understand the dynamic that happens there, that we become a tool in arguments that have nothing to do with anything other than different individuals in Afghanistan's political or tribal complaints. But the final question is really the most important. Do we understand our own motives and priorities in Afghanistan? I don't. I really don't see the existential threat right now that is posed by the Taliban to this country. And as far as, you know, salvaging Afghanistan, I mean, I'm old enough to remember that when we were told of our invasion of Afghanistan, we kept hearing over and over again, we're not going to make the same mistake we did in the 1980s. We're not going to leave this place a barren place. We are going to nation build there. I think it took about six months until people started not talking about that. And then we're going to nation build in Iraq. And then once we build that nation in Iraq, it's just going to flower everywhere through the Middle East. I think we're seeing some of that flowering in Syria right now. Now, I know this is all the way 15 years ago. Well, I guess technically 14. But it is really stunning how we're still there killing civilians. I don't know what the agenda is, but I can't imagine that's going to help. And it seems to me, I don't know, when you bomb a hospital, I just don't understand the argument. I mean, the biggest argument we hear about why when we kill people, it is more morally justifiable than when terrorists kill people, it's because we don't intend to kill civilians. That just happens. And even though we know it's going to happen, the moment you say we're going to bomb something, you know there is X percentage of a chance that you're going to kill civilians. And that percentage is probably not too different from someone who says, I'm going to go out and try and kill civilians. It is definitive that it's going to happen. When you bomb a hospital, I would say the chances of killing civilians are 100%. And the argument is, well, we're doing it, but we're also going to kill the enemy, end quotes. But I mean, really, can you really hold a moral high ground when you order an attack where you know with 100% sureness that you're going to kill civilians and you just make that choice? It's worth it because what? I mean, honestly, like what could possibly justify that? They have a It's just like that Bond movie where they have the big nuclear weapon. And if we don't bomb that compound, they're going to be able to fire it off. It's up in space right now, and it's going to fire. They have a satellite that they put up there. So we've got to bomb it there to save millions of people's lives. We've got to bomb that hospital. I don't even know, I don't like on what, like how that calculation could even possibly have happened in Afghanistan. It's sick. And how much do you want to bet this does not come up as a question in the Republican or the Democratic debates? I would say, I mean, it. I would see it, but 90% chance of it not coming up. 95
higher.
All right, we're going to take a break, folks.
If anybody brings it up, it'll be Lincoln Chafee.
Yes, that's a good point. Jim Webb might.
Yeah, second most likely.
I. It's very hard to imagine. It's a question. Very hard to imagine. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break and head into the fun half, lighten things up a little bit. There's only, what, five more shows? I should tell you, tomorrow we're taking a tech day. We are, everything's a mess in this studio. We're rejiggering things in anticipation of hiring at least one new producer. Putting Michael in a chair where I can sort of don't have, I can only see him out of the corner of my eye. There's a whole lot of mess. All of the sort of the upgrades to our video stuff was perfectly timed with Matt leaving.
Yeah, this beautiful new iMac I would have loved to use for all the years I've been here.
Well, to be honest, it's a used iMac, but it's new to you.
It is.
It's huge.
It's huge.
And it also will support three cameras. So in 2 weeks, I think it is, 3 weeks when the next Republican debate is, we'll be able to do it. We won't have that stuttering and the sync problems that we had.
All right.
So we will. So five more days for Matt on this program. We will not be with you tomorrow. We'll be back Thursday. We'll be here Friday. May have something for you pre-recorded on Monday. Then the final Matt and Mike Monday on Tuesday of next week.
So only three more shows, actually, for me after this. After
oh,
tonight.
My gosh.
Yeah.
And hopefully I will be credentialed for the debate and we'll have some sound from – I have no idea. I don't know what – get stuck in like a basement I'll be – there'll be a radio row or a spin room or whatnot. On Wednesday of next week – I will hopefully have something at the very least. I'll have a roundup maybe with Cliff about the debate. I'll get him on the phone. And then Thursday and Friday, I'll be in Vegas for that tort conference. So I'm just going to stay, obviously. And I should have some really great guests. Almost got Bernie there, but not quite. We'll see. All right. Going to take a quick break. Folks, just a reminder, it is your membership that makes this show possible. Become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. If you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our link at majorityreportkickback.com. Leave us a review on iTunes, majority.fm/review. Have you downloaded the latest Sportocracy? The first... hopefully many majority.fm produced podcasts that are not necessarily about politics. Check it out on iTunes. 646-257-3920 is the number. You can IM us through the app at majorityapp.com or majority.fm on your instant messaging client. We'll be right back after this. Says no, 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 no. Just a little.
Alaska to walk with me. She shakes her head at me. She's a pretty little bomb who says no, 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 no. All the ask her to walk with me. Why can't she ever say say no.